The Holy Roman Empire, Charlemagne, Part 3, Expansion of Charlemagne's Kingdom. I'm going to do these in short sections because I don't want to mix all this together. So we're going to look at the expansion of Charlemagne's kingdom. Then our next show will be consolidation of that kingdom. And then we're going to talk about Charlemagne and theology. And that will lead us to one of the most important sections, and that is where Pope Leo and Charlemagne get together, whether by design or by accident, and Charles is made the Holy Roman Emperor. So that's what we're going to be doing in the next few weeks. So let's look at the expanding kingdom of Charlemagne. With Italy seemingly insured and at peace, Charlemagne sought to subjugate the savage pagan tribe known as the Saxons, a group of people that he will fight most of his life. They had centuries earlier invaded England and actually driven Christianity from large parts of the island. Among the Saxons, to even speak of Christ was a crime punishable by death. Churches were burned, nuns raped, and missionaries were martyred, frequently put in a cage, hoisted to the top of a tree, and set on fire. In 772, when Charlemagne began preparing to leave for Italy, they had launched an unprovoked attack on the lower Rhine region of his kingdom. Now thought Charlemagne was the time for the Saxons to learn the fear of God. Beginning in 775, Charles descended on the Saxon tribes in a way that the old Romans had never imagined. Part of the success of the barbarian tribe against the Roman Empire was in fact that the old Romans had fought tribes as if they were an empire. Against an empire, an army could be dispatched or a leader killed and the rest would flee. Submission of a king meant submission of the country. But in tribes, there was no central unity. Various tribes might have a king, but for the most part, it was every man for himself. The Romans would take out a vast army and then be hit by another tribe. There seemed no way to stop them. If they killed the tribal king, a new king was elected, and the war continued. Charlemagne did not seek the subjugation of a king, but all of the Saxons. For 2 years, defeated armies were given the choice of baptism or death. For pagans, who had little loyalty to cruel gods, the choice was an easy one. In many cases, hundreds and even thousands of soldiers would descend into the rivers for baptism. Religious leaders criticized Charlemagne for this, but politically it was savvy. It must be remembered that the ancient paganism and Christianity simply could not coexist. History had proven this. The pagan gods of Germany were vengeful gods who could never accept the idea of monotheism. Charlemagne was not so foolish as to believe that he was truly changing the hearts of those who were baptized. But he knew that the act of baptism was a blasphemy that the pagan gods could not forgive. In essence, he was not forcing them to truly believe the gospel, but to accept it and teach it to their children. Charlemagne was driving paganism from Germany by force. The ultimate victory over the Saxons would never be completed until 805, 5 years after the establishment of the Holy Roman Empire. But in 777, Charlemagne was able to secure a diet at Paderborn, in which the Saxons officially acceded and granted certain religious freedom to missionaries, as well as the founding of many churches and schools in what was Saxon lands. A large number of Saxons agreed to accept baptism, and Charlemagne was contented. Among those present at the diet were emissaries from the Emir of Saragossa in Spain, who was soliciting Charlemagne's aid against the Umayyad Emir of Cordoba, a man who had seized Saragossa and threatened all Spain. Charlemagne showed that he was tolerant and was willing to work with others against a common foe. While Charlemagne has been accused of hypocrisy for his service to Islamic allies, even against nominal Christian enemies, the truth is that Charlemagne was a wise, and for the age in which he lived, a fair man who didn't force conversions with the sword unless he was at war. So long as Christian missionaries were free to work and certain laws were obeyed, Charlemagne was more than willing to accept freedom of non-Christian religions. And the emir knew this. Charlemagne agreed to liberate northern Spain and set out to reconquer Spain. In this, he was only partially successful. He was able to restore much of the emir's land and would eventually, years later, establish the famed Spanish March to protect the lands in his absence. the Spanish March consisted of overlords who served Charlemagne but were cooperating with the emir. It would also serve as a buffer zone against future aggression by Muslims that might turn north and head towards Christian Europe. And of course, this was actually something that Charlemagne did in his entire kingdom. He had these marches all the way around them as territory so that they were buffer zones against invaders, and that is going to cost him sometimes, because frequently the nobles or the counts in those counties would be given tax advantages or not have to pay taxes in return for manning fortified positions and having troops there. Now, having achieved much success, Charles then besieged the city of Saragossa. Nonetheless, as with all men, Charlemagne had to face defeat sooner or later. He was unable to take the fortress and forced to retreat. The enemies pursued Charlemagne all the way across the Pyrenees Mountains, where Charlemagne's army took many casualties. Further compounding Charlemagne's failure was the news that the Saxons were in rebellion. The rebel leader Wicand had burned Christian churches and monasteries almost immediately after Charlemagne had left for Spain. Saxony was again in the hands of pagan rebels. The defeat and the rebellion made Charlemagne realize that it was time to consolidate his conquests. Too often, conquerors become consumed with pride and take too much too quickly. Charles was wise and sage. The defeat convinced him that he was not unbeatable, and if his empire was to survive, he would need to strengthen it from within. And of course, this particular segment of going into Spain, you very rarely hear about him working with one of the emirs. You just usually, the standard story as he goes in, they add some more territory. And of course, the most famous piece of that is what ends up in the Chanson de Roland, the Song of Roland, where as they're retreating out of the Pyrenees, his rear guard, Charlemagne's rear guard, gets ambushed. And of course, Roland, his number one paladin, his number one knight, was always in the back, was always in the thick of fighting. And Charlemagne, of course, had given him a horn so that if he needed help, he would just blow it. Unfortunately, according to the Chanson de Roland, he didn't blow it until he was just about dead himself. And then Charlemagne then comes back and gets revenge on the people responsible. And in that, it's probably one of the most descriptive destructions of an enemy. The gentleman that Charlemagne believed was responsible for Roland's death, Charlemagne killed him personally by taking his sword, Joyeuse, and splitting him in half from the skull down the other direction. And the book itself has a great description of what happened when that took place. It was always a clip I would use in my classes to get the people interested in the book. So we'll see these little bits and pieces. So we've got the march, we've got other things that have been going on. We talked about administration, looking a little differently at religion. Of course, last time we talked about how he was fascinated with the Jews, a non-Christian group, and gave them land and places to live and protected them as well. So it's an interesting situation, and we're gradually building up to that point where he's going to get the crown of the Holy Roman Empire. Now, the sources for this is Religion and the Holy Roman Empire by Ferguson, Before France and Germany by Gary, The Oxford History of Medieval Europe by Holmes, The Papal Encyclopedia by Bunsen, The Capetian Kings of France, 987 to 1328 by Butler and Adams, French History, Volume 1 by Guizot, Barbarian Invasions by Delbruck, Early Germans by Todd, and The Rise and Fall of the Holy Roman Empire by Criswell. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.